City. I'm on the run, the highway is my home.
I'm supposed to start talking, huh? I was sitting here enjoying the music. Hi, everybody, Talking Fugitive. That's what we do, is talking, and it is Talking Fugitive right here on KSAV. Must be Tuesday. Well, at least every other Tuesday, anyway, because a program so great, it can't even be on every week. It takes that long to digest it. If you want to participate in the program tonight, as usual, 800-407-KSAV, or if you want to email me, you can do so during the program, talk@ksav.org. If you would like to communicate with any of the terrific hosts on Talking Fugitive, you can do that anytime, fugitive@ksav.org. Okay, we talked Fugitive with Kitty, with Ken, and with Bobby Neer. So, Bobby, why don't you start the festivities tonight?
Thank you, Dave. Well, if you watch this series from the beginning, one thing you get to know right away is that Richard Kimball is a considerable escape artist. No matter what kind of situation he finds himself in, he seems to be able to get out of it, no matter how hopeless it may seem, no matter how surrounded he may be. He always manages to get away, and he doesn't particularly do this in a kind of Harry Houdini kind of way. Not really, doesn't have any particular talent in getting out of prison or anything like that, but he manages to get away week after week after week. Of course, the series depends on that. He doesn't normally depend on his wits or his intelligence to do that, although on the last episode we reviewed on the message board, he did do his best MacGyver impersonation by fashioning a fake bomb out of what he had in front of him. It's a pretty bad episode, but he did show considerable talent. Normally, he depends on other people to get him out of trouble. People who drive him out of town, people who hide him, people who do whatever they have to do to save him. Generally, that is because they either believe his story if he tells it to them, or they're repaying a favor, because most episodes are not people helping Richard Kimball, but Richard Kimball helping them, either saving lives or dispensing advice that's critical or saving somebody who's been wrongly accused. He's got a long, long list of, you know, good deeds that he has done, and they pay him back by simply helping him to get away. And as a man who's on the run all the time, he doesn't make a lot of friends because he's not around long enough to make friends. In this particular show, we're going to look at two episodes that I think stand out as being different than that. They're both in season one, and they involve main characters who help Kimball get away early, before they really know a whole lot about him, and before he does anything for them. They just take a liking to him, and they decide they're going to help him. And that's kind of unusual, because you don't normally see that. Those episodes are titled Fatso, which we're going to deal with in the first half of the show, and the second is called Somebody to Remember, which we'll do in the second half of the show. In this first one, which as I said is named Fatso, unfortunately, I think is a very bad title for this episode. So besides being terribly politically incorrect by today's standards, although I'm no fan of political correctness and hate the idea that everybody's held accountable for everything they say, I don't like this particular title. I think it's nasty and mean-spirited, and it doesn't have anything to do with the main character, who is named Davy Lambert, who is, by, I guess, today's vernacular, would be a learning disabled man. He's not really retarded or anything. He's simply slow, and he's got a childlike personality. He's been cast aside by his family, you know, sent out into the world. Nobody likes him. Nobody wants to be his friend. And they've convinced him that he is, in his, used his own words, a big fat slob who nobody likes. And so he's on the run himself, like Kimball. He's just roaming around, getting drunk, and he finds himself in prison one day with Richard Kimball, who's been put in there after a car accident. And Davy's in there because, once again, he's been drunk and disorderly, so they put him in there overnight. What's interesting about this, I think, and the best part about this episode, which I don't generally like, is the instant relationship between the two. I mean, Davy is so lonely and so miserable and so without friendship that when Richard Kimball sticks his hand out in the prison cell to shake his hand, I mean, Davy's amazed. He's astonished that anybody would take to him so quickly. And they form an instant friendship together. And I think there is some screen chemistry here between the two. It's a nice moment, and I really like it. I just think it's too bad that they had to, the writer, focused on the fact that he's somewhat overweight. I mean, Davy is played by Jack Weston, famous character actor for years, who was overweight, but not ridiculously overweight. I mean, he's not even that big. And I don't think that's really his problem. Several times, people call him Fatso, and this is just an irritating title. I think does not serve this episode well. Other than that, I think that some of the characters here are poorly drawn, but the best part about it is the fact that that Davy takes to Richard Kimball, and he wants to go on the run with him immediately. I mean, they've only known each other for a while. When Kimball escapes prison by hitting the sheriff there over the head, they run off together and, you know, get a road movie. Get a buddy movie on the road all of a sudden. And it's not the kind of thing Kimball needs, but Davy is a kind of a likable character in a strange kind of way. What do you think, Kitty?
Oh, I definitely agree with that. And you know, and when you see Davy and he and Richard go home to his family, you really sit there and you wonder, what is it about him that makes his family dislike him so much, because he seems relatively harmless. Of course, we then find out that everybody says that Davy burned down the barn, and there was, I think, at least one horse in the barn when the barn burned.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and Davy is convinced that he did it. And that's kind of where the story starts, for me, kind of starts to go downhill, you know, just because of the whole idea that Davy did this. Everybody just accepts that Davy did it, and there never really was a real investigation into it.
Well, that's what I mean. The characters are too poorly drawn. If his family, we don't really meet the whole family till well into the story, and they're bad, but they don't seem bad enough to me for him to be in this position.
Yeah, I agree with that. What do
Ken?
You think, Ken?
Well, like I was talking with you guys earlier, and if you remember from my review on the message board, I did give this episode a 10 rating. And I'll tell you why. It's a first season episode. It's the 10th one. And the main reason why I liked it is because after watching The Fugitive, you know, first couple episodes, I kind of put myself in Richard Kimball's shoes. I said, I'm a fugitive myself. I'm on the run. And I watched a couple episodes. Remember Brian Keith? He had a fight with him. And then The Witch, episode number two, he fought off some thugs. They were beating him up. And then later in See Hollywood and Die, he gets mixed up with wrong people. But when we got to this episode on Fatso, I liked the fact that these two had a bonding together and that Kimball had a friend.
Well, and let's not forget, Kimball also beat up Davy's brother in this one.
Yeah, I know, but the friendship aspect of the story, I liked it. And Kimball, you know, you got to think about Kimball. He's on the run, he's hiding, he's got Gerard breathing down his neck, and this was kind of a relief for him. There was this one scene, they're near the barn, and they're talking.
Yeah.
And Kimball was at ease, he was really relaxed. And he was smiling. I mean, it was about the first time we'd seen him smile in 10 episodes. And then, you know, the other parts of the story, I didn't really care much for. But I liked Davy. I liked the way he was just a friend to Kimball. And even he wanted to take his place, you know, turn himself into Gerard. You know, I don't know why. It just kind of got to me. How come, Bob, that you didn't like that aspect of the friendship?
No, I did like that aspect of it. Let me tell you what I did like about the episode. I do like the friendship because it's kind of a natural thing. In other words, nobody's paying anybody back a debt. You know, even though Davy does indeed try to help him later on, they just take a liking to each other. And that's unusual in this story because there's so much going on here as far as crime is concerned and trying to get away that most characters, it's not a friendship thing with Kimball. It's either you believe him or you don't. Or he's done something for you, and you need to pay him back. I mean, look at Nightmare North of when you had the sheriff's wife let him out of jail. Well, why did she do it? Because he saved all the children in the burning bus. I mean, she was obligated to do it. He just saved her son's life. So, she wasn't even that sure that he wasn't guilty. This is a different kind of story because Davy doesn't even understand any of that. But can anybody tell me what really is Davy's problem? I mean, He's not retarded. Is he just drunk? What is his problem? Does anybody know?
He doesn't have any friends.
Well, I think what it is with Davey is that he's just kind of one of those people that's kind of clumsy, kind of slow on the take. Not, you know, as you said, he's not retarded, but, you know, he's just one of those people that, you know, you kind of got to explain things to him a few times.
His older brother was the bully.
Obviously the older brother was smarter, and he got some, it was apparent to me that when they were kids, he got some kind of thrill out of being mean to Davey. You know, those kinds of things, you know, will wear on a person.
But you know what's really missing here for me is not knowing what his childhood was like. In other words, when you have a character like this, I think you need to know, where did all this come from? I mean, this is a long-standing thing. He was, you know, he was not, they didn't pay attention to him. He had a brother. They paid more attention to him than to Davey. Is that really the problem? And you don't know that. Of course, it's a limited amount of time in the story, but that's missing for me. There's a certain disconnect there because I don't know enough about him. I'll tell you what I do like about this episode, aside from the friendship, which I agree is the best part of it because it's so natural. I like the scene with Gerard where Davey goes and decides, first of all, Kimball tells him his whole story, and if I'm not mistaken, it's the first time in the series he does that. I mean, he trusts Davey so much that he actually tells him everything. I'm Richard Kimball. This is what happened. I mean, it's amazing. It's shocking at this point in the series that he would do a thing like that. So he really trusts him that he won't say anything. But then Davey goes, when Gerard gets into the thing here, Davey goes and confesses to killing Ellen Kimball. It's kind of amusing in a way because, of course, Davey doesn't fit the profile. He's got two arms. And he tells Gerard, here's why I broke my arm and I had it in a sling and it looked like I had one arm. I mean, he comes up with some goofy stuff. And, of course, Gerard's not going to buy any of that. He just wants to know where Kimball ran off. This is his only interest in it, really. So I always like those scenes where Gerard thinks he's got the upper hand on everybody who's talking to him, but he doesn't. I mean, here's a man who Gerard should run over like a bulldozer, and he really doesn't because, you know, Davey in his own kind of innocent, childlike way is too smart for that. So I do like those scenes. What I really don't like in this episode is the end of it with the family, and it just kind of poops out. It just goes nowhere. I mean, there's a confrontation with the family. The father's sick and in bed. The mother's standing there, and the brother's standing there, and it's just nothing. It just dies.
Bob, that didn't matter to me at all as far as the family aspect.
Huh?
I didn't care about all that. But
that's the end of the story.
But you know what? I saw in this episode a different Richard Kimball than what we were used to. He opened up. You know, he's usually shy or he's reserved or he's just kind of not really getting close to anybody. But in this episode, he is much different. He opens up. He cares for Davey. And, you know, the end, I didn't care about it. And, you know, the end scene, that was really good. I really liked it.
Oh, you mean with Davey going to the mailbox and seeing, getting a note? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I agree. I mean, there's some touching moments, too, and it's nice to see that kind of thing. But it makes me wonder, I mean, is this the only kind of character really Kimball can really open up to? There isn't anybody else, except for his love interest, like Karen. He can't really open up to anybody. He can only do it with somebody like Davey.
Well,
because Davey is so childlike, he would never do anything wrong to him anyway.
How many friends did Kimball have throughout the whole 4 years? Very few, really.
He didn't make friends. How can you make friends when you don't hang around?
All right. Listen, I'll make friends here by interrupting. We're going to take a time out. But before, I want to, as usual, with my incisiveness, get to the really important part. Compared to William Conrad, how fat was Davey?
Oh, Conrad was much fatter.
Okay, so there you are, you know. How dare they call this guy fat,
Absolutely.
Though, and they've got gone. Quick time out. We'll come back.
Karen was really fat.
Going to move on to another episode. Is that correct when we
That's
return?
Correct.
All right, so you return with us, too. We'll be right back on Retro Radio.
Best television on Tuesday night takes place on the radio. Talkin' Television with Dave White discusses anything and everything concerning television, past, present, and future. Specially featured programs, interesting guests, favorite theme songs, nostalgic commercials, blended with listener phone calls and emails, make the 90 minutes from 7:30 through 9 p.m. Pacific Time a different and entertaining interlude. So make a point on Tuesday to stop watching television and start talking about watching television. 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific on KSAV, world-class radio on the World Wide Web.
I'd like to settle down, but they won't let me. A fugitive.
You know, that's actually a different vocalist from the opening one. That's just to see if people are can catch these subtleties. We're back talking Fugitive. We just completed the discussion of the episode Pleasingly Plump, and we're going to... How about that for a title? Would that have been better?
That would have been better,
yes. Okay, see, we know how to do it here at KSAB. Let's go back to Bob and find out what's up next.
Okay, before we resume, let me just tell everybody that we hope to be back 2 weeks from tonight, when we will be discussing the first part of two shows on one of the greatest Fugitive episodes of them all. And that's called Wife Killer. This is a personal favorite of mine. This is a great, great episode. I would say it is a thrilling episode, because what it does is it takes all these dysfunctional characters and throws them to the side, and it gets to the basics of this series, which is that Richard Kimball needs to find the one-armed man. And in Wife Killer, he does catch up to the one-armed man. And the question that's been around all this time is, exactly what is he going to do with him now that he's got him? And we'll find out in 2 weeks when we do part one, acts one and two of The Wife Killer. And then 2 weeks after that, December the 12th, we will do part two, acts three and four. This is a great, great episode. Now to continue with this topic, later on in season one, we have an episode that I like a whole lot better. And it's called Somebody to Remember. And once again, this features a character who takes an instant liking to Richard Kimball and wants to help him immediately. And that character is a Greek immigrant named Gus Priamos. And Gus Priamos is Kimball's boss on a loading dock, who sees him getting pushed around by a couple of bullies one day, comes to his defense immediately. And again, like we did in Thaxo, we've got kind of this instant scream chemistry in which they take a liking to each other immediately. Now, what we find out a little after that is that Gus, unfortunately, is fatally ill. He's been given 6 months to live. And he's not dealing with it at all. In fact, at one point, he tries to kill himself. And what he tells Kimball he wants to do, he feels like he's never done in his entire life one really outstanding thing for somebody. Saved a life or done... This is, you know, he's talking to the right man, because Kimball does that every week. But Gus feels he's never done that in his life. Somehow, you know, he's going to die now, and that's lacking. So he comes up with what I consider to be a pretty harebrained scheme. It's not terribly intelligent. In which he will go, he's a Greek immigrant, and he will go back to Greece, but they will do a switcheroo at the airport, and it will look as though Kimball escaped and went to a foreign country, and that when Gerard finds this out, he will believe there's no reason to chase him in America anymore. And it's very convoluted. It has to do with switching passport pictures and all of that. I really do like this episode. I think it's an interesting episode. It's got really, really great acting. And, of course, it features also, as we discussed on our last show, one of Ken's favorite female characters. Her name is Sophie. And a great performance by Madeline Rue. This is a wonderful performance. And a great performance by Gilbert Roland as Gus Priamos. Gilbert Roland was a silent film star. That's how far he went back. And here he is in The Fugitive in the mid-60s. And these are great performances. And I think this is more touching than it is with Fatso. Plus, we have an added thing here. There's a lot of suspense here. This whole plan to spirit Kimball out of the country is a little nutty, I think. But it's interesting to see it develop. And you've got Sophie in the background, who's only interested in... She says she's going to marry Gus one day, but she's actually only interested in his money. That's all she really wants. He's got $8,000 saved. They act like it's a lot of money, but of course it is in the mid-60s, a lot more money than it would be today. And her only interest is in getting a hold of it. If she can marry him and then steal the money, fine. Whatever it takes, it takes. Sophie is, I agree with Ken, she's really hot, she's really sexy, but she's evil. She's terrible. I just watched this episode a few hours ago, and Sophie is horrible. I mean, she has no interest in Gus whatsoever, and when Kimball meets her out in the street and tells her that Gus is going to die and that she needs to take care of him, and the time is, she says, I'm not a nurse. And then Kimball says to her, but he's, you'll be a rich widow if you marry him. He's got $8,000. Then she becomes interested. Oh, so there's $8,000 in it. Now I think I'll do it. So she's a horrible character. I like Gus. He's a little headstrong. He's got some crazy ideas. But I think he's really sincere and wanting to help Kimball. This is another one of those stories where people just, where somebody wants to help Kimball get away. And more interesting than that is that Gus knows who Kimball is from the very beginning of the story. He found his picture in a detective magazine, a crime magazine, and he knows who he is, and yet he's helping him. So I like the characters here, and I like the development of the story. It's very touching and very suspenseful at the end. What do you think, Kitty?
Oh, I agree. I gave this episode a high rating as well when I saw it. My only complaint, the only complaint I think I've ever really had with the story was that supposedly Sophie is Gus's girlfriend, and yet Sophie, and you know, it's very plain that Sophie's not interested in Gus, but Gus doesn't appear to be all that interested in Sophie, so
no.
Why is it these two are supposedly dating?
We never find out.
Yeah, that's one of the unanswered questions about the show. Why is Gus even hanging out with this woman when it appears that he doesn't even like her that much? But yeah, I think the friendship between the two of them was very well done. And, you know, the way they tried to do the switching at the airport, it was very interesting to watch that because, of course, this is mid-60s and airport security was nothing like it is today. And, you know, you have to think that, you know, maybe they might have actually had a shot at that being successful if Gerard hadn't shown up when he did.
Do you remember, there's a scene in there, I just watched it again a couple hours ago. I don't know if you remember it or not. Kimball goes to the airport, he has a bag, and he just hands it right over the counter. And they just put it right on the plane. No problem. I mean, nobody worried about that then.
Yeah.
Ken?
Yeah, I thought the Gerard angle to the story was a little weak. I would have had a chase scene at the end there in the airport. You know, Gerard is just waiting, and then nothing happens. You know, Kimball finds out in time. I loved Gus in this story. He was very, very good. Gilbert Rowland, he played his part perfect. That was good casting by the producers. And Sophie, since Bob, I think we've done 3 radio shows on Sophie, so what I decided to do is add Sophie to my picture file.
Oh, this is an amazing moment.
But you know what? I was disappointed that they portrayed her in such a, you know, conniving, only the money, you know, she was concerned about money only way. If they had portrayed her in a different way, the story would have been better. I know they're trying to do it, you know, these writers, they come up with different thoughts, hey, let's make her out evil, and then the audience won't like her. But I would have loved this episode even more if Sophie was caring for Gus and maybe interfered with the Kimball and Gus angle there. What do you think? You think that would have worked?
But that's just it. She's the one who turns Kimball in when she finds earlier in the story, Gus gets mad and he takes a picture out of that crime magazine, crumples up, throws it on the floor. She finds half of it, then later on she finds the other half, and she realizes, you know, that it's Richard Kimball. And she has this crazy idea that Kimball has killed Gus and gone off with the $8,000. And that's why she goes to Gerard. But, you know, if you do it your way, you have to have some conflict here. Somebody who turns in Kimball to Gerard. Well, there isn't anybody else, so it has to be her. I mean, how else is Gerard going to come to the story? I think it might have been made for an interesting twist had she been a little softer and gentler, but she plays this part as a very evil part. You know, when we did our show on Halloween, and you said, well, she's not really witchy. Well, she is. I mean, I just watched it a short time ago, and you remember that at the end of the story, she gets away with the money. She actually gets away with the money.
Oh, in the car. They're both.
Yeah, because Gus makes a deal with her. He says, don't tell Gerard where Kimball is right before he dies. He says, don't tell her, and here's the money. And she leaves with it. That's it.
Yeah, she was.
And in fact, she asked him where the money was before she promised not to say anything.
Yeah.
You think the story would have been all right if Gerard was not in it? I don't know. Not much to Gerard in the story.
Yeah, well,
I don't know. I thought Gerard was just being Gerard.
Yeah. Well, there was. I like the suspense there at the end of the airport when they switched pictures and Gerard's waiting at the gate, and of course Gus runs away, and he's already sick, so he can't afford to exert himself, and that's why. I have a question for you, Kitty. I've never been out of the country other than to Canada, and you don't need a passport to go there. Well, maybe you do now, but you didn't in the days when I went. But I know that you have been, and I've never had a passport in my entire life. In the story, they switch pictures on the passport, but is that enough? Isn't there something on the passport that also gives a description of the person?
No.
No,
I mean, really?
I don't
what
think
the
so.
What you saw on the passport is pretty much the way they look, although now, with the new passport, you don't have the ability to take a picture out.
Right.
It's all, the picture is part of the cardboard itself.
Right. Because in the same scene there, when they're in the men's room and they're switching the pictures, all he does is he takes out a little pocket knife and he cuts the picture out and takes the other. It seems so simple. And I'm thinking to myself, isn't there a description that says he's such and such tall or he's got blue eyes or whatever? And that Richard Kimball hardly looks Greek, so...
Well, I think it might have your height and your eye color and everything on there. I don't know. It's been a long time since I looked at my passport. Ken, do you have a passport looked at recently?
I've when I take a cruise, I had to go down to Mexico once, so I needed the passport.
But does it have your height and your eye color and on that?
Yeah, I got it at the post office, and Bob's right. You can't take the picture out of it.
It used to be before they got the new passports. It used to be that your picture was just sealed under cellophane.
Right.
So it seems to me, if your driver's license can't be changed, I would find it hard to believe. I'm sure in today's world. I would hope at least that they took care of that.
How closely did anybody look at these things, and especially back then?
In this particular story, Kimball goes up to somebody at the gate somewhere, and he does. He takes a look at the passport. He looks right at Richard Kimball as if he's checking him out, and he really does look at him. So, it just kind of makes me wonder if it's really that simple to do that. Of course, back in the mid-60s, perhaps it was. Anyway, I think this is a good story, and I really like it, and it's important here. So overall, to just kind of recap the whole thing here, these are just two characters that are real friends, and I think you both will probably agree with me that if the situation were different and Kimball did not have to be on the run and did not have to leave, that don't you agree that these are two friendships that could really have lasted?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they could have brought them back for another episode.
Yeah,
all right. Well, we've got to wrap that up. Tell me this: how much did Gus weigh?
Very, very average.
Very average. Okay, so he was just Slim Jim.
All right. Somebody to remember, but
folks, in an hour, we're going to be talking television with Dave White, Simon and Simon tonight. That's not Simon Cowell and Simon Seville either. This is something different. You stick around for that. And you guys will be back in 2 weeks, and I will talk to you then. The rest of you, stay tuned for the rest of the evening here on KSAV, Caravision Radio.